Good evening, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us, well, we hope we're going to have with us very shortly, Bob Griswold from the Ready Reserve Resources, and we're going to be talking about preparation for what I believe are very difficult times that lie ahead. You know, America's involved in a war in the Middle East. More and more of our boys are being killed all the time. Of course, we hear about the, I think it's up to 1,300 American soldiers killed in combat in Iraq. Now, what does that really mean? Well, it means that anybody who wasn't killed in combat, probably many hundreds of people over there who've been killed, but they weren't killed in combat. We just don't bother to mention that because everything is perception. It's what the American people perceive, even though it isn't based on truth. We never talk about the men who've been killed fighting in Afghanistan. We don't talk about the number of casualties. This evening they announced we've had 10,000 men wounded. But, of course, there have been over 20,000 people treated at Landstuhl Hospital in Germany. Are we to believe that 10,000 have been wounded in Afghanistan, or are they simply cooking the books? And I suspect they're cooking the books. We know that there have been over 30,000 casualties, and this was probably close to a month ago. A lot of these, of course, have other problems. They have psychological problems. They have strange types of pneumonia. And the government doesn't admit that these are allergic types of pneumonia, the type you get from the use of experimental vaccines on our people. So they've got all sorts of problems that they're just not telling us the truth about. And now, of course, we're told there's going to be elections. They're going to be coming up in January. And most Americans feel, well, at that point, why, everything's going to be fine. We can pull our troops out. The American people don't understand. We have no intention of pulling our troops out. We are building 14 or 13 major bases there, the largest embassy anywhere in the world. Why are we building that in Iraq if all we went in there for was to, you know, get rid of Saddam Hussein, the wicked Saddam Hussein? No, the plan has always been to stay in Iraq permanently. Now, if you doubt what I'm saying, if you feel that this is simply ravings with nothing to back it up and that I would make a statement like this worldwide without backing on it, why, well, let me suggest you go to their website, newamericancentury.org. That www.newamericancentury.org. That is the project for the New American Century website. This small group of 25 people, 17 of them came from the Council on Foreign Relations, America's invisible government, but 25 people back in 1997 organized this secret little cabal and laid out a plan for a new international order, and in 1998 they called for a war with Iraq again in the year 2000. It's all up on their website and then in their pamphlet called Rebuilding America's Defenses, and it's about, oh, maybe 100, 150 pages, why they call for permanently stationing our troops in Iraq, irrespective of whether Saddam Hussein is in power or not. That's what it's really all about. But we can't tell the American boys, and we can't tell the other American people, we can't tell the weeping widows and weeping mothers that this is all a charade. It was all planned long ahead of time as part of creating the new American empire. We'll be back here in just a moment, and of course, we'll be talking about the consequences of what we're doing. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We're waiting for our guest to come on the air right now. But right now we've been talking about the fact that irrespective of what happens in January, we're not planning on pulling our troops out because the long-range plan was laid out in a book that was actually published approximately 1 year before the 9/11 attack. In fact, it was September of the year 2000. The report is Rebuilding America's Defenses. You can find it on the Internet. And, of course, if you want to go to my webpage and you can go through my various articles, why we will tell you exactly the page to look at in Rebuilding America's Defenses. Or, better still, if you get our syllabus entitled Iraq, the Untold Story, we actually republish Rebuilding America's Defenses. We've just pulled it down off the Internet. And we have a little glossary there, some lectures. We'll tell you exactly where to look to find out what I'm saying. That's, of course, the publication where they called for the fact that they're not going to be able to pursue their goal, this imperialist goal that the neocons have, unless there is a catastrophic and catalyzing event like another Pearl Harbor. Unless there is a catastrophic and catalyzing event like another Pearl Harbor. And just 12 months later, just by chance, why, we had another Pearl Harbor right here in America. We called it 9/11. And is that possibly the reason that nothing was done to stop that terrible tragedy? Certainly we know that one of the hijackers had actually defected, had gone into the Newark office of the FBI in April of 2000 and said, I'm a hijacker, and I'm here, and we're going to hijack your planes, 747, we've been trained in Pakistan to do it, and we're going to crash it into your buildings. The story is told in Paul Thompson's Terror Timeline. We actually have most of the story in Eleanor Hill's testimony on the 18th of September 2002 before the Joint Intelligence Committee. And we'd be glad to send any of your listeners out there, the skeptics, copies of her testimony, at least that one page about this Iraqi. Now, when Eleanor Hill told the story, she didn't mention they were going to crash the planes into our building. She just said, the hijacker said, we're going to hijack your airplanes, and if we can't get them to Afghanistan, we're going to crash them. But the real story was that the hijacker told them, we're going to crash them into your buildings. And what did the FBI do? Why, of course, they went out to get all and identify all the rest of the hijacking cell. No, they didn't do that. They got rid of the hijacker. They sent him off to England. In fact, they sent FBI agents with him to make sure they got him out of the country. So there'd be no question as to why they didn't try to identify the rest of the hijackers. Because, you see, they really did need, if we were going to pursue our new agenda, our new imperialistic agenda, we did need a catastrophic and catalyzing event like another Pearl Harbor. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Bob Griswold. And Bob Griswold with Ready Reserve Resources. And basically, we're going to be talking about how do you prepare for the coming catastrophic event. Now, what is it going to be? I think it's going to be a war. I believe we are heading into World War III. I believe, of course, behind all of the plans of little men, evil little men, such as those within the Project for the New American Century. And if you go to the website, you'll find out who they are. You'll wonder why the president's standing behind Donald Rumsfeld at this time, and Dick Cheney, and Paul Wolfowitz, and Liddy, and John Bolton, and all these people in his government that got us into this mess. Why, very simply, they control the president. The president is simply a figurehead for the power elite that control him, and they've manipulated this terrible war, and eventually there's going to be terrible consequences, because I believe that this is going to turn the entire Islamic world against America, and I fear that I will one day see American cities looking like the cities I saw back in 1954 when I was a medical officer in Europe. The German cities that were lying in rubble, nothing but simply bricks and cement and nothing else, no form. Maybe one building standing in the entire city. War is a terrible, terrible thing. And what frightens me most is not that we went to war, but that so many good people support this war and believe it's a just war and believe we have a perfect right to attack anybody in the world. Because maybe they're a threat to us. Well, even if they're not a threat to us, wouldn't we be better off without without Saddam Hussein in power? But then wouldn't we be better off without the Ayatollahs in power? Wouldn't the world be better off without the Musharraf, who's the dictator of Pakistan, in power? Wouldn't the world be better off without the Saudi princes in power? Wouldn't the world be better off without Putin in power or a dictator of communist China? Yes, we'd be far better off without all of those people in power. But are we going to go to war with all of those? They had to have a justification for this war. They could not tell the American people the truth that this was a long-range plan for imperialism. And if you read their report, Rebuilding America's Defenses, you will find they intend to have troops stationed all throughout the world as the first line of defense for America. That really is not true at all. It's so America, so our corporations can dominate the world. That's what it's really all about. I believe in the free enterprise system. I believe in America, but we've got wicked people in positions of power, and I fear the consequences of that. And with that as a background, let's go to Bob Griswold. Hi, Bob. How are you doing? Bob, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Well, Bob, if we have on about once a month, just to talk about what people can do to make preparations in case the unthinkable should happen. Most Americans don't like to think that the wonderful utopian world we live in, where you can buy things so cheaply and most people can live so well, that this world could ever come to an end. And yet, of course, there's no incidents in all history where a nation has turned its back on God, has taken God out of its educational systems, out of its government, has flaunted God, has promoted homosexuality and obscenity and all the horrible things that we promote in America today, and the church has remained silent. There's no instance in all history where a nation has turned its back on God, where God has not eventually abandoned that nation. And I think you can look at things from a purely political point of view, but I think, of course, you cannot understand what's happening politically unless you look at it from a spiritual point of view. So Bob certainly deals with preparation, people having things on hand, in case this wonderful utopia should disappear one day, as the utopia that the Germans lived in the 1930s turned into a nightmare in the 1940s. And this has happened in so many other countries throughout the world. And those people at least had made some preparation. Some of them survive. So, Bob, what can people out there in the listening audience do to begin preparing? We don't know whether it'll be terrorist attacks, whether it'll be a nuclear attack, or a biological attack, or a chemical attack, or maybe all of them, right here in the United States. What should people be doing?
Well, Doctor, you mentioned something earlier in the beginning of the program, is that you've traveled in Europe, and you've been around, and you've seen the world, and for those people who have, and I've traveled around the world several times and been to numerous countries in the Middle East and in Europe and in Asia, there really is, we live in a glass bubble here, because we think we can live, I mean, we can be the one person in the neighborhood who wants to bully everybody else in the neighborhood. And I don't say that disrespectful to our troops, disrespectful to the people over there serving, but the decisions that are being made, even in light of what's like happening today in Mosul, where we had 19 service people that are dead, our soldiers that are dead, and I don't know how many more wounded, and the wounds we don't talk about too often, but, you know, they're wounds that are all life-altering wounds, and wounds that, you know, where they're missing limbs and so forth, and the hatred that we're breeding overseas. And again, I can say I've been there. I've been there, you know, even recently. That it's incredible to think that we can keep on going on the way we are. That we can, you know, and if it was just one thing, Doctor, you know, you could argue, well, that's an anomaly. That's something that's we're going to get over. But you know, when you look at our four entanglements, which we were warned against by the people, you know, who founded our nation, we look at the massive debt that are piling up. We look at the fact that anything to do with goodness or wholesomeness is being eradicated from our national consciousness. Even the mention of Christmas, you can't say Merry Christmas anymore because somehow it's offensive. You know, the story of even there were some kids that were trying to tell the story of the candy cane, the Christian origin of that. Can't do that. You can't wish anybody Merry Christmas. You can't sing Merry, you know, any kind of Christian Christmas hymns. You know, that's another thing, and it goes on and on and on. My very good friend Jerry Guidetti from the ARC Institute, she talks about the food security of the nation and how we're susceptible to agri-terrorism, just where people can come in, and we think biological weapons, we think of, you know, smallpox and those types of things, but there's numerous biological weapons that are made to destroy food supplies. In fact, Tom Ridge that recently said
Tommy Thompson.
Okay, Tommy Thompson. Right. He could not believe that our food, our agricultural system, had not been attacked.
And why would any government official make
that ridiculous
statement, unless, of course, you've been put up to it, all these statements?
I know, it's insanity.
Why would he make such a ridiculous
statement? Well, it's almost like he was inviting it to happen.
Almost like he was inviting
it to happen. Well, I mean, I don't want to say he was, but it's hard to go and deny it. You know, we're a nation that lives on 20,000 containers a day coming into this country so that we can enjoy the lifestyle that we live. 20,000 of those, like huge Greyhound-sized containers that come to the United States every single day. And, you know, that brings us the things that we enjoy. And all you have to do is, under the threat of possibly having a nuclear weapon in one of those 20,000 containers, you would stop most of those 20,000 containers from coming into the country. So those are things people need to think about. It's just not one isolated incident where I warn people to say, think about what you need. Think about the household goods that you use every day in and day out. The water we drink, and I know the British Brookfield water filter that cleans water. I know the food that we eat. Again, we used to, in this nation, We used to have great food reserves. Jerry Guidetti, again, talks about this extensively. The food reserves that we used to have in this nation, we don't. We have an on-demand agricultural system today to where if the grocery store is not restocked almost on a daily basis, it runs out of food because there are no food warehouses left. There are no wheat mountains left. It's all gone. If we do not, if we have one failed crop, if one thing happens, then we have shortages. And if it happened on a massive level, we would have, again, those massive shortages. So people need to think about those things. And again, we live in this world where we don't ever think of things like that because it's not pressing on us right now. We like to put it to the back of our mind. And it only comes to the forefront when it's happened, and then it's too late to prepare. And people panic because you can't do anything at that point. The opportunity has come and gone. And so that's what I tell people to think about, what we need on a day-to-day basis, and then to start making those, set those things aside on a regular basis so that when a disaster, a calamity happens, and I believe, again, that God is sovereign and that he does bring nations to task that do offend his law, and we are massively, with impunity, offending the law of God.
Well, I think it's so important that people actually have some sort of a plan. They have a suitcase or a couple of suitcases. Not that you may ever leave your home, but if there was a problem, you would want to know where the things are that you would need in case of an emergency. And that's the beauty of having a checklist to go through. And I know that Bob has this up on his website, and we'll tell you later how to get to his website. The book we carry, Inside the Red Zone by Igor Shafid, who was actually trained at the Leningrad Military Academy. He was trained for biological and chemical and certainly nuclear warfare against America, because the Russians have always intended one day they would come against us. And isn't it interesting that suddenly now the Chinese and the Russians are having a joint military exercises, and of course Putin is increasingly critical of what we're doing. And of course I'm not saying that he's necessarily wrong, but I think this whole fall of communism back in 1990-1991 was as phony as a $3 bill. Holly Swanson, who wrote Set Up and Sold Out, tells me that she has the papers that Gorbachev had taken out 6 months before the phony fall of his regime. The papers with the Secretary of State of California to set up his foundation. He was already planning on coming here 6 months before the attack. And when he came here, he set up something called the State of the World Forum. Who do you think was on his board of directors? Why, George Shultz. He's the man who picked George W. Bush to become president. He picked Arnold to become our governor here in California. And then, of course, there was George Herbert Walker Bush. We have the material that comes from the State of the World Forum. A fellow named Mabiki, most people don't know who Mabiki is, or they didn't know then. He was sort of an obscure black man living in England, and now he is, of course, the ruler of South Africa, Ted Turner. Well, you can imagine, of course, it was all laid out ahead of time. We couldn't let the American people know that. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Bob Griswold, and we're talking about making preparations. So, Bob, why don't you go ahead and just tell people, you know, what you have, the list that they have, and then source of things that they really need to start laying aside, getting organized, and then just hope and pray you never have to use the material, but it would sure be nice to have if there were a catastrophe here. And if the catastrophe came, there would be no time for preparation.
Well, Doctor, what we have is we're a website. We've been in business for 10 years, and what we do is that we have a catalog that provides numerous items, everything from alternate energy to long-term food storage to portable water filtration systems to books. We have an extensive book section on how to do things. If you're looking for a book on how to become self-reliant in a particular area, whether it's gardening, agriculture, raising animals, doing things for yourself. We have hundreds of books in our catalog. We have a lot of other things, homesteading supplies and so forth. And, you know, again, what we do with the catalog, people can call our number, and we do charge $5 for the catalog, which we do refund if they ever make a purchase ever. So, they can go to our website at ReadyMade, resources.com and either request a catalog via email, or they can call us after the program at 800-627-3809. Again, the website's ReadyMade Resources. That's standard spelling, ReadyMadeResources.com or 800-627-3809. And you mentioned on our website, we do have, there's a thing up on the right-hand corner, top right-hand corner, it says important information links when they go to the website. And there's a whole checklist there of things you might not think about that you might need, but and a lot of it depends on where you live. But you can print out that checklist and start looking at things and thinking, well, do I need that? Do I have that? And also, there's some free books on there that you can download. A lot of information on, you know, like filtering water, how to do certain things that could become necessary one day. And you can download those for free. Also, again, they can go to the website and look around, see what we have. Or, again, after the program, they can call and order that catalog. It's about 150 pages, so it's pretty extensive. A lot of things that you won't find in most places. I think we've put together a very, very thorough catalog for anybody who thinks that, you know, America and the world are headed for possible, you know, some very rough times ahead. And for those who are wise enough to set food, water, things like that aside, the coming calamity will not be near as bad on you as it will for those who do nothing. Again, you look at places like Florida, which suffered, you know, a record 5 hurricanes this season, and the shortages that developed, just the things that happened, the short tempers, the people couldn't get their water, drinking water wasn't available, food was in short supply, definitely electricity was gone. Well, all of those things today in our modern age are available to, for a person to have on their house, in their possession, so that when those things happen, we don't have to suffer the same fate that those who do nothing will have. We can prepare, and the technology has provided ways for us to do most of those things and set them aside so that when we need them, they're available.
Well, I think what's important for people to realize is that they may very well never leave their home. In fact, the last thing you would really want to do would be to leave your home unless you absolutely have to. But at least you would have the things there that you would need, and we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening is Bob Griswold from Ready Reserve Resources. And, of course, we're talking about what you would do. And the one thing you would probably do, you'd get a suitcase. Buy an old suitcase. Go down to Goodwill and buy one. Doesn't have to be anything very elaborate. First of all, you probably would never use it and pick up and flee from your home. In fact, if you were fleeing, why, everybody else would be fleeing, too, and there'd be congestion on the roads, and probably you'd never get very, very far. But at least you would have the things there at your home or in your neighborhood that you would need for short-term survival. And if you had to leave your home, why, you could just pick it up and whisk it along with you, whatever means of transportation you had. But this is why it's such a good idea to have these things set aside ahead of time. And you need a checklist. There are things that you would just never ordinarily think of. And yet they're things that you would have to have, even for a short-term survival for yourself and for your family. So as bad as it is, and people don't like to hear this sort of thing before Christmas, but we had Bob Griswold scheduled, so we wanted certainly to get him in before the end of the year. I think it's just wise to be prepared, and you'll feel a lot more comfortable as the scenario unfolds before us. I think that very difficult times lie ahead. Think about the people over in Iraq today. Think about the people who were in Fallujah, the people who fled from that area because they knew the attack was coming. They destroyed well over half the city, and most of the people's homes, if they're still standing, are badly damaged. And there's no water there, there's no nothing, and the people are living in just abject horror. Now, who's responsible for that? Well, the terrorists, after all. If the terrorists hadn't been there, we wouldn't have gone in to get them out. And after all, wasn't Saddam Hussein a bad, bad man? Yes, he was a bad, bad man. But who financed this bad, bad man? We financed him all during the 1980s, and we kept him in power in the 1990s. And those of you who have not yet read Robert Baer's book, See No Evil, Robert Baer was the senior CIA official in Kurdistan, which is the northern part of Iraq. He was there in 1995. And his story of how every Iraqi he knew believed that the United States government was keeping Saddam Hussein in power. And as he pointed out, we knew, of course, that he was smuggling oil into Jordan and into Turkey. We could have stopped it with a telephone call. And we didn't, because he needed money to keep his military going. And, of course, the Iraqi government, Iraqi military, on several occasions tried to overthrow Saddam Hussein during the 1990s. And who kept him in power? Why, the United States government simply refused to support the Iraqi military. Amazing as it was, why the generals who were willing to risk their lives to try to save their country were arrested and tortured to death. And the American government betrayed them. And that is what the Iraqi people believe. And that, of course, is the story that Robert Baer tells in his book, See No Evil. It's an important book. We still have copies of it. If you have not read it, you need to. So, as wicked as Saddam Hussein is, don't you think that the people who kept him in power are equally wicked? And if any of you doubt what I'm saying, why we have an article out of the Washington Post, we'll be glad to send you free of charge if you simply call us at 1-800-544-8927 and ask for the Washington Post article on Saddam Hussein. That's 1-800-544-8927. And you ask for the Washington Post article on Saddam Hussein. You'll be horrified when you actually read this and realize that we financed Saddam Hussein. We sold him those terrible chemical and biological weapons. We even gave him the money that he could buy them with. We gave him these massive amounts of money, and then we encouraged him to go into Kuwait.
I think it was particularly Donald Rumsfeld that sold the anthrax to
right. I don't know whether he sold the anthrax, but certainly Donald Rumsfeld was one of the key people, was our representative going over to visit with Saddam Hussein during the early part of the 80s.
Yes, it's amazing the web that when you really start looking into it that we have sown, and then when it came back to haunt us that we did engage with people that we should not be engaged with, we wanted to say that wash our hands clean of it and say that we had nothing to do with it, but we really did have a lot to do with Saddam being in power. We put him there, and that's what some of the Iraqi people said after the war. We want to thank you for delivering us from the dictator that you gave us.
Right. But of course, the thing is, we create the finest enemies that money could buy. We put people into power all throughout the world. We helped Saddam Hussein come to power and maintain his power. And then, of course, we deposed him just exactly as we brought the Shah of Iran to power in 1953. And we deposed the Shah of Iran in 1979 and brought the Ayatollahs to power. And now maybe we can go to war with the Ayatollahs and get rid of them. I think maybe we might be a lot better off if America tended to its own affairs and developed its own oil and other alternative means of energy. And, of course, let the rest of the world determine the course of their governments. But they're not going to. That's why I think we're headed into a terrible, terrible crisis. We'll welcome your calls when we get back. Well, Dr. Stan here, our guest this evening, Bob Griswold. Well, Bob, what sort of things do you think people should be laying in at the present time? What do people need in case there is a catastrophe or catastrophe?
Well, let me explain. The fact that modern technology gives us the ability to buy a food supply today that you can actually store for 10 years and it maintains its food value and taste. Alpine Air is such a company, and they've been in the food storage business for quite a few years, and what they do is they take food, they cook a meal, they freeze dry it, and then they put it in cans, number 10 cans, which are like the big coffee cans, and then you can store that. You can put enough food for two people for a month underneath a bed, and then all you have to do is take it out when you need it, and it's very tasty meals. You have like pre-made, like a spaghetti and meat sauce type meal, or chicken and rice type meal, vegetables, and then dairy products, and even breakfast items. You can take those out when you need them and just add hot water. You don't have to cook them. You just have to add hot water to them. And then you have food to eat. This food is not something like we can imagine that might have had 30 years ago. It's very, very tasty. It's very good. And you can pick up enough food for two people for a month for about $230. And that way you can set it aside, and then you have it. One of the things we're going to offer tonight for people who do want to call is we have the Katadyn Combi water filter, and that's a, it's a kind of like a little small bicycle pump. It's one of the most popular portable filters in the world. You can take it, you can actually put it in a pond, put it in a mud puddle, and you pump it like a bicycle pump, and it puts out biologically and chemically pure water. That filter sells for $169. And what we're going to do tonight, if anybody who buys it, we're going to include another free replacement cartridge, which are normally $75. We're going to include one of those free with it. So you're going to get the filter, and then the free replacement cartridge, which again is $75 if you were to buy it normally. You're going to get that absolutely no extra cost. So you'll have enough water to do about 20,000 gallons of water. It also, again, keep in mind it filters water both biologically, takes your cryptosporidiums, your giardia, and those types of things out, and it also takes out chemicals. Chemicals from farm runoff or lead, nitrates, those type of things that can be so harmful to us. And so anybody who calls will get that, along with a free water treatment test kit. And what this thing does, it'll test your water, so you can, one-time use, you can put it in any water supply, and it'll test it for your nitrates, your lead, your chlorine, bacteria, and so you'll know what's in the water that you're drinking. This thing would be good just to use to test your tap water regularly, because again, when you do that, in combination with a Big Berkey water filter that I think, is it you that sells that?
Yes, we actually carry the Big Berkey.
Yeah, the Big Berkey, which is a great for you. I mean, that's one thing every house
will have. Hold that
for
just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I was just talking to Bob. I was asking him what the things really needed, and one of the things he mentioned is some sort of a pump. What do you call the pump?
It's the Katadyn Combi water filter.
It's the Combi
Katadyn
water filter. It is basically something that you can actually put in the water, and you'll actually pump the water out. Is that it?
Yeah, it's handheld. It kind of looks like it's about a foot tall and about 2 inches in diameter.
Something like, actually, of course, the old-fashioned air pump that you pump a tire with?
Right. And the Katadyn is a Swiss, they're made in Switzerland. The world over is using them. International Red Cross recommends using them. Most of the U.S., the Special Forces armies around the world have a Katadyn pump with them, because you can literally throw it in anything. A stream, river, a mud puddle, stagnant water, it really doesn't matter, because it filters those bacteria and also important, the chemicals out of the water, and the filter will last about 10,000 gallons. And again, we're going to give you a free filter tonight if you order it, so that's normally $75 and the water test kit that comes with it. But again, those are the two things people really need to think about. We need to have food, we need to have water in our homes. You know, even the government is telling people to do that, and I find that, you know, when our government's telling people to prepare, I think it's really serious, because I know they realize that there's nothing they can do when the catastrophe happens to feed that many people. It just will not be available. They can go into a place like Florida when they have a hurricane. They might be able to deliver some MRE meals. But on a massive level, if there's a nuclear attack in this country, it will shut down commerce. It'll shut down the economy. And what you have in your household could be what you'll have in your household for quite a while. And that's why we recommend people to think about food independence, the ability to procure clean drinking water without having the tap water working. And again, with the Big Berkey, I wouldn't drink the tap water no matter what, because of the millions of people in this country who become sick drinking tap water every year with the chlorine and fluoride and all the secondary chemicals that are forming in the aging pipes of America as the water leaves the water treatment plant and it's going through all these old pipes. There's things that are forming in there that are very toxic to people. And the Big Berkey does take those things out. So,
right, of course, we do carry the Big Berkey here at Radio Liberty, if you're interested, or the Berkey Light, which we think are good things to have under any circumstances. But this other little pump sounds like something would be very nice to have if you have any proximity to a stream or a well or anything of that sort. But, of course, you have to have food, you have to have medical supplies, you have to have flashlights, you need portable radio, battery-operated radio, so you have an idea of what's going on. And, of course, there's certain things, checklists, that you would want to have. And one of the interesting things that somebody had called and asked if the Big Berkey would filter out radioactivity. Well, of course, I called the people who made them, and they say, well, radioactivity, you know, where you get into trouble is particles become radioactive. It's not the radioactivity is going to get in the water. It's the particles that are radioactive. And of course, the big Berkey or the Berkey light will actually filter that out. But after a couple of weeks, you've got to have a fresh set of filters to put in there. And then, of course, you have to have special, gloves if you were, it's a nuclear situation. You would want to have a pair of rubber gloves to take those filters out and then to replace them with. But you certainly wouldn't want to do that with your hands because, of course, you would have concentrated the radioactivity on the water filter, something people would just never ordinarily think of. But now is the time to think of it and then put those things away and then forget about it and hope and pray you never need them. But if you don't have them, why you'll be very, very sorry if the impossible things that are happening, what I think are coming down the line, do actually take place.
Yeah.
And certainly, if you've not read that book, Inside the Red Zone by Igor Shafid, and it's really his story of what it was to live in Russia. And of course, it's a love story and it's a Christian story because it tells about his becoming a Christian, but also about what he had learned about preparedness living in the Soviet Union. And of course, I'm very, very suspicious of most of the people who come from the Soviet Union and are supposedly over here telling us what needs to be done. But having talked to Igor for a number of hours, I think about 4 hours, and then talking to him off the telephone, I am convinced he is just what he purports to be. He's a man who loves America, who's so pleased to be here. He is an evangelical Christian, and he wrote this book predominantly and primarily to help warn people and to get them to start preparing. And I will tell you that he's not in for the money because he gives us a very good deal as far as the books are concerned so that we can, of course, go ahead and sell them and help support our ministry. So this is not a money-making proposition for him. I think it's a labor of love. And he spends a lot of time traveling and just trying to get people to think. And if you honestly out there in the listening audience think that the government is going to be there to help you when there is a catastrophe, why you've got another thought coming. There are too many people in our country anyway. There are people really who have openly talked about, people like Jacques Cousteau, the necessity of eliminating 350,000 people a day. Or when some of the speakers speaking at the Gorbachev State of the World Forum talked about, you know, how if we could just reduce the population by 90%. The world population, 90%, there wouldn't be enough people around to do any harm. So there really are people out there in key positions in government who do feel that way. They're not going to tell you that, but they are the elite. And they look at us as common folks. They look on those boys over in Iraq as purely expendable. So you're going to have to look after yourself. Go ahead, Bob.
That meeting, the Gorbachev Foundation you were talking about, the strange thing about that, Gorbachev said that it was past the time of waiting for nature to take care of the population reduction. We need to take an active role in it. That's basically, I'm saying that's verbatim, but that is basically the comment he made, that we need to take an active role in population reduction, that we cannot wait for nature to do this anymore, which I found to be absolutely stunning because you know what he's recommending. He's recommending that humanity step in and that we remove those who do not need to be here. I don't know who decides. Obviously, the ones that are making the decisions will all decide that they need to be here, and that we'll be the ones that they take out of the way. The religious, the people that do not go along with their way of thinking, we're taken out of the way. And so again, it stresses all the more why people should become more reliant, because one of the ways that they'll do this is the coercion of food. It happened during the Nazi era. People were coerced with food, and it'll happen again. It happens all over the world. It's happening in Korea right now, in North Korea. People are being coerced by food. And if we don't think it'll happen here in America, we are historically naive, and that we should not be that way.
I agree with you. Let's put our telephone number out in case anybody would like to call us. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Maybe you feel that this is certainly a hysteria. We shouldn't even be talking about this. Well, I wish we didn't have to talk about it. I wish I didn't feel an obligation to try to warn people that we live in very uncertain times. I've been to the meetings. You've heard me say this before if you listen regularly. The American Civil Defense Association, people from FEMA there saying, we don't have any plans to take care of the American people. In the case of a massive attack on this country, there are no plans to look after you. And so, and as a woman from FEMA said, you've got to start planning on how you're going to look after yourself. What you really need, a little portable radio so you can talk to other people in your neighborhood, so you can communicate with the people close at hand, because you're going to have to support one another. There is not going to be any police force there to look after you. You're going to have to be prepared to defend yourself and your family. You know, because, of course, we saw what happened when a law and order broke down in the inner city of Los Angeles, not one, but a number of occasions, the Watts riots, the Rodney King riots. You saw organized chaos, and now that we have literally almost 15 million illegal immigrants in this country with nothing to lose at all, you know, if there was chaos, do you think for 1 minute that a lot of these people wouldn't be out there claiming what they feel is rightfully theirs? Because, after all, didn't the Europeans steal California and Texas and New Mexico and Arizona from them? We would have chaos in this country like you could not believe. And we would not, and of course we don't have a National Guard. Our National Guard's all over there fighting in Iraq. We do not have the Army Reserve units. They're all overseas. And of course, are there enough policemen really to maintain law and order in this country? People have to begin looking on how they're going to defend themselves and their families. We've got Barbara calling in. Hi, Barbara. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Just when you were talking about, you know, if this sounds kind of really, you know,
Dire,
yeah. But the fact was, you know, during the hurricanes in Florida, and they talked about the fact that various relief organizations had supplies in trucks ready for the people, but they could not get to them because all of the bridges were out. And so it was days before they could get emergency supplies to people. So those, you know, people, it really behooves them to have their own supplies, emergency supplies, because just the fact that somebody else may have them somewhere else does not mean they're going to get them to you.
What do you think would happen if, now we're told this is inevitable, and so if a nuclear weapon, whether it's terrorism, goes off in a major city of the United States, what do you think would happen? Do you think it would be just a local, within, say, 25, 30 miles, that would be affected? Or do you think the entire nation would go into some type of shock that could shut down the transportation system, keeping in mind that those 20,000 containers a month that come into our country? What do you think would happen?
I think we'd be in real trouble, and I think that people have to start, we don't know how this is going to play out, but we do know that people are going to have to start preparing to look after themselves. Hey, thank you so much for calling, Barbara.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Let's go to Tim calling from Indianapolis. Hi, Tim. How are you doing?
Oh, hi. Thanks, guys. I wanted to make a couple comments.
Go ahead.
Now we had the baby ripped out of the stomach, diversionary story. Now we got the 19 dead soldiers. Right after the report on the FDA with the Celebrex and the Vioxin here, we had Henry McKinnell, CEO of Pfizer, appeared on an Aaron Brown show last night telling us that everything's fine. He's putting the onus on the doctor. The doctor knows what's safe. He doesn't know what's safe, does he, Dr. Stan?
No, he actually doesn't. He doesn't know what these statistics are. He believes what the detailed man or the detailed woman tells him, and, of course, they are paid to lie to the doctors. That's what it's all about.
Well, like I say, it's a sin that we had to have 19 soldiers sacrificed as a diversionary tactic. Look on CNN, the lead story. It's not the 100,000 possible people might die from Celebrex, sir. And also, real quick, Dr. Igor Shahid mentioned that that we have a former KGB two-star general working in Bush's Department of Transportation. Why would, you know, that's kind of fishy, seems kind of funny there, why we would have a former communist general working under Department of Transportation.
Probably for the same reason that we financed communism since its very inception. Maybe the people who really rule America don't look upon communism as an enemy.
And real quick, Bob, what do you, now would be a good time for the government to pulse to shut down some things, the heat and electricity. What do you have to keep people warm? Thank you.
Okay, well, the best thing you can do for keeping warm is if you don't, you know, if you live in a rural area and you can have a wood-burning fireplace where you can have good access to firewood, obviously, that's what we have. That's why my wife and I made the decision to move out of the country quite a while ago, and we have a stove in our home that I can fuel with wood that would heat our home very well. I've done it. Even in the coldest of nights, I can heat the whole home with wood. For those who live in, city type settings, you can actually pick up a kerosene heater. That's a brand name, but there's lots of them out there. Keep some kerosene on hand. Now, it's hard to do it for a long period of time, but again, what I call the panic zone is if you don't have anything and a disaster happens, you immediately go into panic because you realize, gosh, you know, I have the jet ski, but I don't have a way to heat my home. I have a new plasma TV, but I don't have a way to heat my home.
It's pretty hard to do anything with that plasma TV if the electricity isn't working either.
Exactly. So you can actually store some kerosene and pick up a heater like that, and that will heat your home you can store enough kerosene to do it for a month. Propane. You can buy a propane heater, and propane is one nice thing about it. It's very safe storing it, and it never goes bad. So you can get a big propane cylinder, and you can heat your home with that. And you don't have to keep it very, very hot, just a little bit of freezing, and maybe have some extra blankets and things of those nature on hand that you can keep your family warm. That's one of the important things that people in more winter-type climates need to think about, and that's, again, what my wife and I have done. We've actually tested it to see if we could do it, and, again, having a piece of property here, I have enough firewood that I could keep going for quite a while if I needed to.
Okay, let's go to Terry calling us from Sun Valley. Hi, Terry. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan.
Have a question or comment?
I read a book. You were talking about possibility of a famine in the United States.
Right.
And I read a book by a man named, I think, David Van Gorder, called Ill Fares the Land, written in the 1960s.
Right, I remember that book very well.
Mm-hmm. And it seems to me like this is something that is, because he goes back to early as the Roosevelt administration, and how many people were taken off their farms and put into cities and so forth. And I've heard you talk about the Georgia Guidestones as well. So it seems like something that's been in the works for a very long time is coming to a head.
I think you're absolutely right. And anybody who hasn't seen the Georgia Guidestones ought to go to Elberton, Georgia, or simply go up on our web page. And, of course, that's radioliberty.com. I have something called the Population Control Agenda. And we go into the Georgia Guidestones and the genocidal programs and policies which are in place today.
I'm going to have to get it.
Doctor?
Right, go ahead.
The Georgia Guidestones, probably most people that are listening don't understand what those are and what they represent. In fact, I think it's the Babylonian image that it's written in Babylonian script and several other things. That
Babylonian cuneiform, classic Greek, Sanskrit, and hieroglyphics. That's the caption on the capstone, which says, a tribute to the Age of Reason, something like that, which, of course, takes the whole thing back to Thomas Paine. Let these be guidestones to the guides to the Age of Reason. And then the major slabs are written in 8 separate languages, English, Russian, Chinese, Hindu, Hebrew, Swahili, and Spanish, I think, something like that.
Yeah.
So 8 different languages, and of course, point number one in the Georgia Guidestones is great stone monument there with all the astrological, attributes is maintain the world population in constant balance with nature. It is an occult meeting place where occultists come from all over the world. Of course, they understand its significance. The average American doesn't even know what the word occult means.
No, it's something that they're actually promoting, you know, the population reduction. And so, again, food will be a major item in this new economy of the world.
Hold on, let's just make sure. Terry, do you have anything else you want to say?
Has your guest spoken to any civic leaders locally in this area about anything like that he is discerned of the times or are very receptive to what he's talking about?
Well, most people do not want to hear of a problem until it comes up and absolutely bites them. I mean, you just look at right now the Social Security Administration. There will never be true Social Security reform done until it absolutely comes, and it's catastrophic because politicians don't want to make tough decisions. It's just not politically popular to make a tough decision. Nobody's going to address the issues that we're talking about until they come up and absolutely are catastrophic. And then at that point, it's too late.
And at that point, that's why I put these programs on, Terry.
Thank you.
To try to get people to begin making preparations. Thanks so much for calling.
You're welcome.
Well, our guest this evening has been Bob Griswold. Bob, let's go ahead and get your telephone number and of course, your address and your website out one more time.
Okay, it's readymaderesources.com. Again, there's quite a bit of information that people can download, and they can get in touch with me. I'll be here for about an hour at 800-627-3809. Again, that's 800-627-3809. They can call, and again, we have that special on the Katadyn Combi water filter this evening where they purchase the filter at normal price and then receive the $75 replacement cartridge absolutely free along with the water test kit. So that's something, and again, the food supply, we have the long-term food storage. You can actually go on our website and look at it. A lot of solar energy products, you know, things like that, devices that you could possibly need, solar-charged radios, ability to solar charge batteries, those types of things are all on our website. Or they can get our catalog, which is $5 fully refunded when you make any purchase. And it's 150 pages of self-reliant type products.
All right, fine. Well, I think that people really have to begin thinking about this and don't put it off. You know, get a food supply in. Get a vehicle by which you can purify water. And actually, do you actually have containers where they can actually store large amounts of water at least?
Yeah, yes, we have you know, small like 22-gallon. We have 55-gallon containers that they can purchase and store water in. We have stuff that you can put in the water to help keep it pure for long periods of time, so that after you have stored it, it doesn't go bad. But things like, you know, even when you do store water, you should always filter it on the other end. So if you have your big Berkey water filter, you can take the water out of storage and run it through that to make sure that there's no contaminants that developed in it. And those are things people need to have. I recommend smaller containers to store water in, because a 55-gallon one is quite heavy. It's hard to move it unless you're sure you want it. When you fill it up, you better make sure that's where you want it, because you're not going to be moving it for a while. You know, water is 8 pounds a gallon, so you're roughly looking, you know, 55 gallons of about 400 and some pounds. The food, the water, depending on where you live, if you live in a big city, you might want to think of what you can do if there's biological or chemical terrorism. I know there's a program coming on here in a few weeks, I think it's the 2nd of January, on what would happen if a smallpox attack happened in the United States. Well, anybody who came out of the Soviet Union was in their bioweapons program will tell you that the Soviet Union cooked up tons and tons of smallpox, and it's been really pretty much unaccounted for what happened to it. So the ability for these things are out there. It's horrific. Nobody likes to think about it. Nobody wants to deal with it. But when it does happen, we will have to deal with it.
Well, Bob, we're out of time, but thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure, and look forward to having you on again real soon.
Thank you, Doctor.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me once again give that telephone number for Bob Griswold. It's 800-627-3809. That's 800-627-3809. He was talking about the Katadyn Combi water filter. That's a little pump that you can actually use to get water out of a stream or pond or whatever you want. And, of course, it filters it as it comes out. And you can go to his website, readymaderesources.com. That's readymaderesources.com. Again, the number 1-800-627-3809. Well, this is the time when I need to remind you that my ministry is primarily listener-supported. We're dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs, who believe there's a problem and would like to become a member of the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And that's how 5 hours every day we're able to reach out across America, really across the world, by the miracle of shortwave and internet, and try to get people to understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle, being fought on a political, ideological, cultural battlefield. And really, if we don't recognize the spiritual component of this, we're not going to understand why God, if he is a just God, is going to bring judgment on America. For as Thomas Jefferson said so well, God who gave us life, gave us liberty. But freedom of a nation be secured when the conviction has been forgotten that liberty is the gift of God? I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just and this justice cannot sleep forever. And as you look around and see what's happening to our country, as you look around this Christmas season, you see how they're taking Christ out of Christmas. As you look around and you see the depravity on television, and, you know, tune on MTV, understand we are the greatest purveyor of pornography in the world. If God is just, He is going to have to bring retribution on this country, and it may come in many, many forms. It may be brought about by our own leaders. It may be brought about by Islamic terrorists. It may be brought about by an atomic attack by Russia or China. I don't know how it's going to come. But I do know if you read the Old Testament, you find that time and time again, God would bring the Assyrians down to attack Israel. When they turned against more, bring the Babylonians or bring the Egyptians. It happened over and over again. And you would think we would learn from the lessons that they learned, but we don't seem to. So all I can say is we're not going to be able necessarily to turn what's going around unless there's a great revival, and I would hope and pray for a revival. But if there's not, then maybe we're just talking to the remnant. But at least we're reaching people and reaching more people all across America. Every day, reaching people across the world every day who are beginning to understand how this all fits together. And the fact that there really are satanic forces in the world. Now, if you have not yet seen the videos, they sold their souls for rock and roll. We have the 3-hour, the 4-hour, or the 10-hour version of that video. We've recommended to you. We're recommending another new video. It's called Megiddo 2. We carry Megiddo 1, the March to Armageddon, which, of course, goes into the background of the plan for the three world wars that was laid out back in 1870. And then Megiddo 2 is just off the press. We'll actually be having the producer of that, Chris Pronto, will be with us for 2 hours on Thursday evening. And, of course, we'll be taking off on Christmas Eve. But Megiddo 1 and then Megiddo 2, both excellent videos to give you some insight into the background of what's going on, very professionally made. And of course, you can get them by calling 1-800-544-8927. We have a new video that we've made called None Dare Call It Genocide, going into the background of what's happening, the planned program to kill off large parts of our population, or at least to so dumb them down and destroy the minds of our youth that they're incapable of understanding what's going on today. And I sometimes wonder if that's why we're doing so poorly in the international SAT scores and why the students in college really can't learn the way that they should. So 1-800-544-8927, the video, None Dare Call It Genocide. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision protection till tomorrow. May the Lord be with you. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. I'll be back in just a moment here. America, Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Mr. John Hankey. And John has been studying what happened to John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Now, what does John Kennedy have to do with this? After all, this happened 40 years ago. Well, it has everything to do, because, of course, if they could get away with assassinating the President of the United States and stage a coup d'etat, you know, and just kill the man who was elected by the majority of the people in this United States, then it means that they must have terrific control over the media. They have to control our intelligence agencies. They have to control our FBI. They have to control the people who are appointed to the Warren Commission. They would have to have really controlled the President of the United States at that time, Lyndon Baines Johnson. And, well, when you understand that Lyndon Baines Johnson was one of the men who planned the assassination, how can I make that statement? Well, I've talked to his mistress, and actually his mistress was Madeleine Duncan Brown. And if you get our JFK update tape set, while you actually hear the interview with Madeleine Duncan Brown, where she talks about the meeting held the night before the assassination that Lyndon attended, and it was fascinating to see who was there. Representatives from the FBI, representatives from the CIA, representatives from the oil men, representatives from the mafia, they were all there. It was on the evening of the 21st of November, planning the murder of an American president. Well, there are so many stories out there that need to be told, and we're going to be talking with John Hankey, who's been trying to get as much information together as he can on the Kennedy assassination, because once the American people understand that Lee Harvey Oswald did not shoot President Kennedy, he was tied into military intelligence of the CIA. His a mentor, George de Mornschild, was a CIA operative, and our friend Bruce Adamson has spent the last decade or more tracking down de Mornschild. He has a copy of de Mornschild's a telephone directory, a little a little book he carried with the telephone numbers and whose numbers were in Lee Harvey Oswald's mentor's book. Why? George Herbert Walker Bush, Lyndon Baines Johnson, and, well, Bruce has an amazing story, and we'll have to get him on again sometime real soon. But right now we have this John Hankey, and John has been studying this. But before we get too far into the Kennedy assassination, I want to talk about Gary Webb, who we've had as a guest on our program several times, who'd written about the CIA's involvement in drugs, and just this last week, why he was had a suicide. And the question, did he commit suicide, or was he suicided? Because at least the reports we saw in our newspaper is that he had committed suicide by shooting himself in the head several times. And John Hankey had taken it upon himself to try to get to the bottom of that. And he, had, of course, has put up part of the money for an investigator to go up to actually see the body of Gary Webb and want to know what's actually happened, if the investigator went up there. And, of course, if he needs funds to help pay for the investigation to try to get to the bottom of what really happened to Gary Webb, a Pulitzer Prize-winning writer, newspaper writer, investigative journalist, who wrote the story about the CIA involvement in drugs. We'll be back here in just a moment with our special guest today, John Hankey. Dr. Stan here. Hi, John. How are you doing tonight?
Hi, Dr. Stan. I'm delighted to be talking to you.
Well, tell me, what did you find out about Gary Webb?
Oh, man, it's just, it's a really tragic story. I'm not sure how much time we want to spend talking about Gary Webb, but...
Did you get the investigator to go up and check the body?
Right. The coroner had put out a report that said very, very little. It said it was a suicide and that... that there were wounds, and that was all. And I sent my investigator up there. He got a letter, a signed authorization from the family, and the coroner said, well, we're not going to let you look at the body, even though we're supposed to. And even though he had, my investigator had gotten the San Francisco coroner to intervene in order to, right, to give a little extra push to get him in the door, they said, no, we're not going to let you in until he showed up with the family. And with the family there, you know, they couldn't do anything, right? And they backed off very quickly because, you know, if they had tried to stop the family, you'd have the headlines screaming in the San Francisco Chronicle, right? It would be much too obvious. So they let him in, and he took pictures, and what do you know? The next thing you know, the coroner is coming forth with the same thing that my investigator said, which was that there were two shots from the back to the front in the head.
Two shots from the back to the front in the head. How many people have ever committed suicide by shooting themselves twice in the head?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that question. I don't know if you mentioned it, but let's mention it now. Cyril Wecht is, I'm sure you're familiar with him. He's a former head of the American Society of Forensic Sciences, which is the organization that all reputable autopsy specialists, forensic scientists, belong to. And he is also one of the main people of any stature to stand up, one of the main medical people of any stature to stand up and say that the Warren Commission report on Kennedy's wounds was an absolute travesty, to say that the single bullet theory is an absolute travesty. And it's, you know, it's, I love this guy. In when he's on videotape, you can see how angry he is. I mean, it's, in any case, he was so impressed by the facts that he agreed to take this on at half his usual fee, which, you know, I think was enormously generous of him. In any case, the only reason that this information came out was because I believe that the only reason this information came out was because the investigator went there and was able to get in because the family supported him.
Now, was this his wife or was this his mom and dad or what? His ex-wife?
The family you're speaking of?
Right.
It was one of his sons, and he has two sons, and I don't know if he has a daughter. I believe he has a daughter. And his ex-wife accompanied the investigator. The investigator was also able to persuade them to... They'd been planning to cremate the body.
Sure. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and first our guest this evening is John Hankey. John Hankey, at his own expense, hired an investigator to go up to view the body. Was that in Sacramento? Where was it?
It was in Sacramento.
Okay, and fine. Of course, to view the body of Gary Webb, and of course, the coroner had signed him off for as a suicide, despite the fact that he had not one but two bullet wounds in the back of his head going through to the front. Is that right?
Yes.
And, of course, how many people do you know who've ever committed suicide by shooting themselves in the head twice?
Well, Dr. Webb's assistant told me that they had done 25,000 autopsies and they had never seen a suicide that was two shots to the head.
All right, fine. Well, now, do you want to put out a plea, ask people to help finance this? Because you finance this on your own.
No, the cost of the autopsy was going to be $6,000. There are elements who have managed to persuade the family that they don't want an autopsy. My investigator, his name's Paul Kangas, he was able to persuade them that they should cancel the cremation. These people went around and, I don't know how much detail I want to say on the air, because they will, I'm sure they'll sue me, because they can. Right? I mean, if they...
Well, you don't have to say who they were. Somebody doesn't want an autopsy. But actually, if there were a suicide, should have an autopsy. You know, it's a violent crime, and violent crimes should have an autopsy.
And the investigator also questioned the coroner. Did you check under the fingernails? No, the coroner didn't. He questioned the coroner, which is, you know, what you would do if you suspected there may have been a struggle. It's the first thing you do. The investigator asked them, "Did you?" Right, you got two shots to the head. You should no longer be assuming that this is a suicide. You should be assuming that there's foul play. Did you look for any evidence of foul play? No, they didn't. There's all these suicide notes all over the place. Did you gather them? Did you collect other handwriting samples? And did you then have them analyzed? No, they didn't. So they didn't conduct any sort of an investigation, whatever.
Well, then why wouldn't you? Because that is the job of the coroner.
No kidding. And, well, so they're not doing the job, which is another red flag, right? I mean, two shots to the head is a red flag. The fact that they didn't let that information out is a red flag, and the fact that they did not really conduct an investigation is a red flag, all of which should, I would think, militate that any reasonable person would insist on there being an autopsy. And I called you and asked if we could discuss the Gary Webb case because I was worried that we were going to need to raise $6,000 to pay for the autopsy, but that's, unfortunately, we're not in a situation to be able to do that at the moment. It's conceivable that the family may change their mind, but I really don't think so. I mean, they're very, very distraught, of course. They're very, very distraught. And these...
But somebody is putting pressure on them not to investigate this any further. Would that be a fair statement to make?
Let me say more specifically. If somebody in your family gets murdered, if somebody in your family has written exposés describing in minute detail the operations of the CIA and their importation in C-140 transport planes, hundreds of tons of crack cocaine into the country and flooding the cities with this stuff, and the trail goes, and they delineate, right? They spell out in minute detail that the trail goes back to the White House, it goes back to the office of the Vice President, George Herbert Walker Bush, who was the star of the show of the Kennedy assassination. Obviously, this person is going to... Gary told many, many people, if you speak to virtually anybody who knew him well, he said, if you hear that I committed suicide, don't you believe it. And so, you know, of course, the family is familiar with this sort of threat, and when he's killed, the guys did a good job. The people who killed him did a good job, and they've supplied the family with enough circumstantial evidence to make them feel like, well, look, we can comfortably say that this was a suicide, and why would we want to provoke these same dark forces that we know hated Gary and wanted him dead and that he felt enormously threatened by? And even if it were a suicide, why would we want to provoke these dark forces? Why would we want to poke this hornet's nest and when we can just let it lie quietly? Now, I'm not suggesting that that was a thought process of the family, but I am suggesting that that would be my visceral thought process, right? That in your gut, that your somatic nervous system, is that what I mean? Right, your unconscious would be processing this and saying, look, this is dangerous, don't go there.
All right, fine. What you're suggesting, are they concerned the fact that there is no incidence in all history where somebody shot themselves in the head twice? And you actually have pictures of this now?
Yes.
You have pictures of the fact that he shot himself twice, and I don't suppose that you could very well appeal this to the government, could you?
I'm sorry. Well, you be sure to appeal September 11th and the anthrax situation, the fact that nobody has been arrested and tried and convicted in either one of those. Appeal that one to the government while you're at it. But, you know, I mean, you're not going to go to the Fox to have them investigate the murder of 15 chickens.
But, of course, the thing is that the coroner in Sacramento has the right to go ahead and investigate this, irrespective of whether the CIA wants it investigated or not.
Well, I suppose that they do, but... they're not going to. This is my position, that the coroner's in on it, right? That any coroner who sees two shots to the head and does not immediately go into crime scene mode is in on it. He's either just incredibly incompetent, in which case there's no point in appealing it to him, or he's in on it. In any case, there was another individual who took a email that I had written to one person, and they got their hands on this and they took it to Gary Webb's brother and said, oh, look at this. This is terrible, the stuff that's going on the Internet. And in the email I said that his brother had said that he didn't believe that the suicide notes were authentic, and I just got off the phone a few minutes ago with my investigator, and we cleared this up. it was a brother who said it, only it wasn't Gary Webb's brother. It was one of the two brothers who were Gary Webb's sons. And one of them, who's in his early 20s or late teens, told my investigator, this is what my investigator tells me, that he didn't credit these suicide notes. He didn't think that his father had written them. But it was a misunderstanding, right? And I attributed that statement to Gary Webb's brother rather than to the children. And so this guy shoves it in his face and manages to get the family stirred up that this is just, you know, it's a mess and all of these rumors are flying around. And, you know, all right, it's certainly hearsay, and it was not entirely accurate. And, you know, I'm to blame for it. And you know what? I think also, let me say that I think it was very unprofessional for me to have said anything about it at all. The issue is not whether the circumstances surrounding Gary Webb's death suggest a murder. It doesn't matter. When a person of Gary Webb's reputation and history and stature is found violently dead, there has to be an investigation. There absolutely has to be an investigation. And anybody who says otherwise is somebody who's trying to support...
I would think that the CIA would want to have an investigation so they could prove that they weren't involved.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Well, anyway, we'll just leave this lie there. Ladies and gentlemen, does the CIA kill people? Yes. In fact, I've had this is the third of the people I've interviewed since I've been doing this that have died under very, very mysterious circumstances. And one of them was Jim Keith. He wrote some wonderful, wonderful books about what was going on. One on the OK bomb, on the Oklahoma City bombing. Another on mind control. And not only did he die after a very minor procedure in the hospital, after an arthroscopic surgery on his knee, and I've done probably 1,000 arthroscopic surgeries in the knee, I have never lost a patient, but Jim Keith died, and that could have happened, one in a million. But the fact that his publisher would die within a month or so, well, that would make it maybe one in a billion. And then the fact that his ex-wife would die a couple of weeks later or a month later, I'd say that's a one in a trillion. And if you believe that, the chances of one in a trillion, well, I think the most logical solution is somebody wanted to get rid of Jim Keith. It's happened to others. I've actually talked to CIA assassins, three of them, L.D. Brown, a man named Chuck Tatum, a man named Daniel Marvin, Colonel Daniel Marvin, a fine Christian patriot. But you see, they can't let the American people know that. But I would suggest anybody who wants to check this out could go no further than to General Odom's book. General William Odom wrote a book published last year called Fixing Intelligence. Now, he headed the NSA, the most secret of all secret government operations, and he can't tell you what's going on, but he can ask questions in his book like, should the CIA be assassinating people? Should the CIA be assassinating people? Well, I think the answer is pretty well obvious. We'll be right back here in just a moment with our special guest this evening, John Hankey, and we're going to begin talking about another CIA assassination plot. Well, it wasn't a plot, it was actually carried out, where they, with the help of certainly paid assassins, were able to kill the President of the United States. Not only able to kill him, but they were able to get away with it. And what they did is they planted all sorts of false clues. They had, of course, immediately an investigation sanctioned by the President. The purpose of the investigation was not to reveal, but to conceal the truth about what happened. One of the people on the committee actually was very, very suspicious of what happened. He didn't want to sign the report. His name was Hale Boggs. And you know the strangest thing about Hale Boggs is...
Let me guess. He
died in an airplane accident. And, of course, one of our frequent guests is the son of the man who was with the Hale Boggs when he went down. And, of course, now they find out the FBI knew exactly where they were. They were sending out distress signals. And you'd never guess, they never sent anybody to get them back. Congressman Hale Boggs died along with the other people in the plane. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is John Hankey. Well, John, let's talk a little bit about the assassination of John Kennedy and the video that you put together, which I think is a great, great, very, very convincing video.
Sure. You know, it's interesting. I've been studying this stuff for, I guess, 40 years. And I've worked on it really, really intensively for the last 2 years. And but now that I've been able to finish it and I've been able to show it and talk to people and get into various discussions, I've been able to get some distance from it and get some perspective on it. And one of the things that is really striking me at this point in time is that the Kennedy assassination was a continuation of World War II. And what I think your audience needs to understand is that Hitler was a stooge. If you get any mainstream history book that's been written in the last 5 years, you'll find out that Hitler was recruited by German army intelligence to go in and organize the Nazi Party. He was not a free-acting individual. He was a front for what was, in fact, a corporate dictatorship led by the German military-industrial complex. One of the real important pieces of that is that Prescott Bush, the president's grandfather, was a leader. He is one of the key representatives of the Nazis in the United States. That's in my video. He was the chief operating officer, CEO of Union Bank of New York, which was in 1942 seized by the U.S. government as being a Nazi asset. I don't think that you can overestimate the importance of the involvement of the American Nazis in the creation of Hitler. The Rockefellers and the Harrimans and the Fords contributed millions of dollars to Hitler's election campaign and to his early economic initiatives. But and these are a couple of details that most people will not be familiar with. Standard Oil in the 1940s, in the early 1940s, had developed a compound that would allow you to turn coal into gasoline. Now, if you're the Nazis and you want to have war, Germany has no gasoline, and they couldn't possibly have had this war without this formula from Standard Oil. And Standard Oil wanted to sell it to them, and the Defense Department, people in the Defense Department, recognized the military importance of this, and they blocked it. However, Rockefeller representatives in the State Department were able to overrule that, and they not only the Rockefellers and Standard Oil not only gave the Nazis the formula, they built a factory for them. The factory was built at Auschwitz, and that's just the beginning of the story. It goes on. Standard Oil also developed synthetic rubber. I think it's called nylon. And both the United States and Germany were desperate to try to develop a formula for synthetic rubber, because otherwise they were going to be forced during wartime to transport rubber across the equator, right, huge distances, and be subject to have their ships subject to attack by the enemy forces. So they were both very anxious to develop synthetic rubber so that they wouldn't be dependent on an item that required such delicate transport. Standard Oil developed it, and they gave it to the Germans, and they didn't tell the United States government about it. Harry Truman, give him hell, Harry, is an expression. The way that Truman got that is because he was just destroying the chairman of Standard Oil in a Senate hearing on this particular subject. He was telling him that he was going to prison, and his name was William Farish, and he had to go home and decide whether he was going to go to prison or whether he was going to hand over his Rockefeller bosses. And gee, what a surprise. He died that night and was never able to...
Hold that thought right there.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is John Hanke, and he's put together a great video going into the background of the Kennedy assassination. He's talking about, of course, how he feels that Kennedy assassination was a continuation of World War II, and that what you saw, that Adolf Hitler was simply a tool of the German military-industrial complex recruited by the military intelligence, of course, to create this war situation. That Adolf Hitler was aided by Standard Oil, who provided him the wherewithal, the ability to create a gasoline out of coal, the ability to create nylon or synthetic rubber. He didn't mention, of course, that they actually gave him also the ability to make high-octane gasoline. You had to have special additives to be able to get the very high-octane gasoline that you would need for your airplanes. And, of course, why Standard Oil had given that. And then, of course, John was talking about how Prescott Bush was involved with a bank in New York that was a conduit for Nazi money during the war, and actually Prescott Bush was actually arrested by our government for being involved with the Nazis. that the head of Standard Oil was appearing before a congressional committee and being questioned by Harry Truman, and was told he was either going to go to jail or he was going to tell the truth about the Rockefeller involvement of building up Adolf Hitler. And the man went home that night. He was going to have to tell the truth the next day, and he just happened to die that night. Pick up the story from there, John.
Sure. Well, and see, I think it's really difficult to tell who's the tail and who's the dog in this. Is it the American Nazis who are wagging the German Nazis, or is it the German Nazis that are wagging the American Nazis? And I believe that it's the American Nazis who are wagging the German Nazis. I'll give you one quick example. Chase Manhattan Bank in France seized the assets of their Jewish depositors and then ordered Hitler to order them to do it. Hitler had not given the order. They did it, and then they contacted Hitler and said, hey, we're doing this. Order us to do it. Well, you know, if you tell somebody what orders to give you, who's in charge here? Prescott Bush, the president's grandfather, was a leader of these American Nazis, and World War II did not end for them, right? They never surrendered. The Rockefellers and the Harrimans and the Fords and the DuPonts are the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower tried to warn us about.
And, of course, the Harrimans, the Bushes, I don't know about the DuPonts, but we certainly know the Harrimans and the Bushes, and even one of the Rockefellers, all come from the Skull and Bones. And Skull and Bones originated in Bavaria. They have all sorts of Nazi memorabilia there in the tomb at Yale University. They sing the good old German songs. The swastika adorns the walls. Because, of course, the Skull and Bones came from the same origin that the Thule Society did, that, of course, gave birth to the Nazi movement. So there's a close working relationship, there always has been, between Skull and Bones and the mystical movement that energized the German Nazi movement.
Well, and these are the people who killed Kennedy. And that's who the Bushes today represent. That when you look at George W. Bush, he's a flagrant supporter of a Hitler-style corporate dictatorship. He takes the lobbyists for the coal industry, the worst polluters, and puts them in charge of the Environmental Protection Agency and the Clean Air. He takes the worst, most abusive of the lobbyists for the logging companies and puts them in charge of the interior, and on and on. I mean, they take the worst of the most powerful and abusive corporations, and they are just wholesale handing the government over to them. But I'm here to tell you that that is exactly what Hitler stood for, and that's what these guys stand for. Bush and these, and the Bush is, by the way, just a minor puppet for, you know, these huge billionaires. The Bushes are not wealthy by Rockefeller standards. They're merely hired thugs, but all of them have their roots in the Holocaust. They have their roots in the Kennedy assassination. These guys are capable of anything, and when your listeners examine the evidence of who was involved in September 11th, they should never doubt what these guys are capable of. Now,
well, I think it's for our latest listeners need to know that George Herbert Walker Bush was affiliated with the CIA at that time, and of course he was in Dallas on that day, wasn't he?
Sure. How much time do we have?
Well, we've got about a minute before we go to the first break.
Oh, no. I mean, altogether.
Well, we got another half hour.
Oh, no. Yeah, we'll definitely get to that.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with John Hanke. Now, if you doubt out there in the listening audience that American corporations financed Adolf Hitler and actually gave him the wherewithal to have the war, you need to get Professor Sutton's excellent book, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. We carry the book, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. Also, you want to get, of course, my video with the interview with Professor Sutton, formerly with the Hoover Institute, and it's called The Best Enemies Money Could Buy. That's The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, and Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. Check out the facts. Find out, and, oh, you might even want to get our new four-tape set, Operation Keel Haul. It will chill your blood. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and that's not Operation Keel Haul, that's Operation Paperclip, the new four-tape set that we have. Operation Paperclip goes into how the CIA helped the Nazis escape into America, how the CIA helped the Nazis escape. 10,000 of them escaped to South America through the rat line. The CIA worked with the Nazis. So Klaus Barbie and Adolf Eichmann and Mengele and Martin Bormann could all live out their days. Well, of course, Mengele and, pardon me, Barbie and Eichmann were tracked down by the Jewish Simon Wiesenthal Center and of course taken back to stand trial. But the other 9,998 of them lived out happily down there the rest of their lives in South America with the full support of the American government. Now, why would that happen? Because there is a dark side to our government. And I think this is really what John Hankey's talking about. The average government employee is a good person. The average American is a good person. But there are a very, very small number of people who are inherently evil. So you pick up the story there, John.
Okay. On the where you left it off, I think I've seen lots of stuff that tried to suggest that the Nazis coming to this country was some kind of an infusion of Nazism into this country. And I would make the distinction, Standard Oil, in there's a brilliant book, I'm sure you're familiar with, The Unauthorized Biography of George Bush, details the fact that Standard Oil was writing checks to the SS, who, until the last weeks of the war, on a daily basis, Standard Oil was writing checks to the SS as they were carrying out the Holocaust. The point that I want to make is that for George W. Bush, that treachery and the massive slaughter of your own citizens and the betrayal of every democratic principle has been this guy's bread and butter since he was a little child sitting at the breakfast table. And that when people evaluate the evidence from September 11th, they can never refuse to draw the conclusion because they think, oh, my president could never do that. Your president has been raised in a society where that sort of thing was the bread and butter. It's the way that they operate. But let's jump into the Kennedy assassination then. The first big break, I think, for people investigating the Kennedy assassination came during Watergate. And during the Watergate process, the Watergate trials, the Watergate hearings, the leader of the Watergate burglars was a guy, a CIA agent named E. Howard Hunt. And while Hunt was sitting in jail, he was blackmailing Nixon. And it's fairly apparent that, and this is one of the things I deal with in the video, is that he was threatening to talk about the Kennedy assassination and Nixon's involvement.
Hold that thought right there, sure. And we'll be back in just a moment with that. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and our guest is John Hankey. He's put together a great video on the Kennedy assassination. A lot of great information, and of course, John is saying that the first real break that we have, in trying to understand what happened on November 22nd, was during the Watergate investigation when Howard Hunt was actually arrested, was sitting in jail, and he was threatening Richard Nixon with revealing what he knew about Nixon's involvement in the murder of John Fitzgerald Kennedy if he didn't give us some money. And so, and basically, if that may sound pretty far out to you, you need to hear my interview with Madeleine Duncan Brown, who was the mistress of Lyndon Johnson. We have her, we carry her book. We have my interview with her. Her book is Texas in the Morning. And we carry that book. We also carry the four tape set, the JFK update. Assassination four tapes out there. You'll hear Madeleine Duncan Brown talking about who attended the meeting where they were planning the assassination. It wasn't just Lyndon who was there, but a man named Richard Milhouse Nixon. So go ahead.
So Hunt, the CIA burglar of the Watergate, is sitting in prison, and he told a reporter from the Washington Post that he and his team were assassins and that they had been trying to kill Fidel Castro for years. The people all over the United States, particularly people with a mind towards critical thinking and investigation, had rejected the Warren Commission for years. But it's apparent that the people who killed Kennedy were very, very powerful, and therefore the first assumption would be that the CIA was involved. But we don't know, right? The CIA never reveals the names of any of the members of his agency. And for Hunt to come out and say, yes, I'm CIA, and yes, I'm an assassin, was a double whammy for people. For the first time, we were able to identify not only a CIA agent, but a CIA assassin. And so that really got the ball rolling. People started looking at Hunt very, very closely. And after Nixon was impeached, the Congress seemed, you know, acted like they were really in charge of themselves for once, that they were their own masters. And there were a couple of different committees that investigated the Kennedy assassination. And one of these committees got a hold of a memo from the head of the CIA, Richard Helms, to one of his lieutenants, his first lieutenant, Jesus Angleton, in which they were discussing Hunt and discussing the fact that Hunt was in Dallas the day that Kennedy was murdered and that he was involved in the assassination. Spotlight magazine, which some of your listeners may be familiar with, printed an article detailing all of that. E. Howard Hunt sued them for slander and lost. A jury looked at all of the evidence and decided that the preponderance of the evidence, the weight of the evidence, indicated that E. Howard Hunt had indeed been involved in the Kennedy assassination.
And I think there's a wonderful book. It's called Plausible Denial, written by Mark Lane. If you haven't read that book, it is the most incredible story. Actually, there was a jury that eventually came out and said that basically the CIA agent was involved in the Kennedy assassination in response to a libel suit that he had filed. Not a word in that in the controlled media in America. The book Plausible Denial, I'm sure you're well aware, acquainted with that one, aren't you, John?
Oh, it's in the credits of my movie. It certainly is the source of a large number and of some of the most interesting information that I have on the Kennedy assassination.
How could you possibly have a trial in the United States where, of course, the whole thing is to bring out the truth about what happened at the Kennedy assassination, and the jury, after hearing all the evidence, says, yep, the CIA was involved. Howard Hunt was there in Dallas on that day. And I don't know whether they said he was involved, but he had said he wasn't in Dallas, and they proved that he was in Dallas, and they felt that the CIA was involved in the assassination. You would have to have tremendous control over the American media to block that story out. But the book, Plausible Denial, you probably have to get it from off Amazon.com, a used book, but it's well worthwhile reading.
Very good. And, you know, we should plug my video sometime.
Well, let's plug your video right now.
Well, JFKII.
Plug it a couple of times. Go ahead.
Okay, sure. JFKII.com, JFK2, Roman numeral 2.com. You can also, that's where you can order it online. You can order it through the mail also if you write to me at JFKII. The address is 333 Washington Boulevard. Number 421. I should say that more slowly, perhaps.
To repeat it one more time, very slowly.
333 Washington Boulevard, number 421. And the city is Marina del Rey. You can goof that up as long as you get the zip code right. The zip code is 90292. Marina del Rey, R-E-Y, 90292. I'm selling the DVD. It's 2 hours for $10 for the first one. If you get two, it's $15. The VHS is much more expensive for us to make and mail. The VHS is $15 for the first one and $10 for any after that.
Well, now, of course, do you have a telephone number where people can actually
sure.
call you?
Well, it's one that I'm talking on now, so please don't call on it. But it's 310-301-7712.
Now give that one more time.
Sure. 310-301-7712.
All right, fine. And so it's a fascinating video. It's got great footage of the Kennedy assassination, great footage of some very significant people saying, of course Kennedy was assassinated. Everything was a cover-up. I mean, they go into the background of the magic bullet. I mean, you hear solid forensic experts talking about how it should be so obvious that this was a murder, this was an assassination, this was a coup d'etat. And yet, of course, the media has played this down and demonized anybody who dared suggest that bullets don't make right-hand turns in mid-flight, don't go down, up and round, and, it should be obvious to anybody that there were four bullets fired. In fact, the oversight, the final congressional investigation, actually it came up with a conclusion there was a conspiracy, there were four shots fired, and they immediately disbanded that congressional committee because they were, I think, afraid for their lives.
Well, let me toot my own horn a little bit, right? I mean, I've read thousands and thousands and thousands of pages on this topic, and I think in about 12 minutes, I present all of the most incontrovertible evidence. Most of it photographic, some of it is FBI memos, but mainly it's photographic evidence demonstrating there's no Bush supporter that I've ever shown this movie to who did not then say, gee, well, that doesn't mean the son was involved, but I've never shown this to anyone who was not persuaded that the evidence is just so overwhelming that it's very, very clear that John Kennedy was killed by a massive conspiracy. And there are photographs showing bullet holes in the windshield. There are photographs showing bullet holes in the metal strip that goes above the windshield. There are several witnesses identifying bullets hitting the grass, but also the extent is the footage of Kennedy's press secretary walking into a press conference and pointing to the right side of his head, indicating a shot from the front right that blew out the back of Kennedy's brains. Every single doctor in Dallas says that Kennedy got hit by a bullet in the front right that blew out the back of his head. The New York Times, on the day of the assassination, carried the story by their Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter Tom Weichert that Kennedy was hit by a shot in the right side of the head that blew out the back of his head. And it was not a secret in the first minutes after the assassination. It was turned into a secret that Kennedy had been shot by bullets and from multiple directions, but that the fatal shot had in fact come from the front right and not from the school book depository, which was behind Kennedy. In any case, we have left E. Howard Hunt sitting there in the courtroom having been found guilty by this jury of the assassination. But where does Bush come in? And I'd like to do that right now.
Go right ahead.
E. Howard Hunt, after World War II, worked in the same office as Prescott Bush. E. Howard Hunt, when he was sitting in jail demanding money from Nixon, got that money. The money was provided by the main fundraiser for George Herbert Walker Bush, a man named Mosbacher. Hunt, the checks were cut by the checks that Hunt received were written by a money launderer who, by his own testimony in the video, worked for George Herbert Walker Bush. His name is Ramon Rodriguez. But the main connection between George Herbert Walker Bush and E. Howard Hunt and these Cuban burglars, these Cuban murderers, they were members of an assassination squad, is at the Bay of Pigs. All of them were Bay of Pigs veterans. After the Bay of Pigs, they all became members of Operation 40, which was this assassination squad. They carried out unauthorized terrorist raids against Cuba. They are what I think you could accurately characterize as misguided, a team of misguided anti-Castro Cubans, which brings us really to the centerpiece of the evidence against Bush, which is a memo written by J. Edgar Hoover 5 days after the assassination about a meeting that took place at the FBI headquarters 2 days after the assassination. The title of the memo is Assassination of John Kennedy. Now, when you read this memo, it doesn't say anything about the assassination of John Kennedy, but it says plenty about these misguided anti-Castro Cubans. In fact, that is the subject of this memo. It's the subject of this memo is these misguided anti-Castro Cubans, but the memo names the CIA supervisor for these misguided anti-Castro Cubans, and it doesn't name Hunt. It names Bush. It names George Bush as being the supervisor of these assassins who were in Dallas the day that Kennedy was murdered, according to the evidence that the jury weighed and used to find against Hunt. Now, Bush says that must be a different George Bush. You know, of course, there's all kinds of Bushes running around working at the CIA. And so what I did in the video is I say, fine, let's see if we can find corroboration. Is there any other evidence that would suggest what it was that George Herbert Walker Bush was doing at this time? I mean, he later became CIA director. It's his contention that he became CIA director without ever having any experience in the CIA. There were lots of people who didn't find that credible when it happened. He says it's just a coincidence that he later became head of the CIA and that he is also named by Hoover as being in the CIA in 1963. However, so let's look at Bush's background and see whether it jibes with this allegation by the Hoover memo. Bush was in Skull and Bones. Well, lots of people were in Skull and Bones, but Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush, was in Skull and Bones with the son of the head of hiring for CIA. he had a closer relationship with the head of hiring for CIA than could easily be attributed to anybody. When he left the Skull and Bones, he went to work for a man who was identified by his father. Prescott Bush identifies Neil Mallon as being a recruiter for the CIA. Bush leaves Skull and Bones and goes to work for Neil Mallon, a recruiter for the CIA. He worked for Mallon for a number of years. During this same time period, in another letter written by Neil Mallon, Mallon describes a meeting between the head of CIA, Dulles, Prescott Bush, the grandfather of the president, the father of George Herbert Walker, is meeting, according to this letter, with this CIA recruiter. He's meeting with the head of the CIA, Alan Dulles, to discuss the CIA's operations in the Caribbean, that is to say, to discuss the Bay of Pigs operation, which the Hoover memo suggests that Bush would have been involved in, right? That if Bush is supervising these anti-Castro Cubans, of course, Bush would have been involved in the Bay of Pigs. In fact, just before the Bay of Pigs in 1959, well, a couple of years before the Bay of Pigs, when the CIA preparations for the invasion at the Bay of Pigs got into full swing, Bush left working for Neil Mallon and founded his own oil company, Zapata Offshore Oil. Zapata Offshore Oil operated in exactly the same area that the CIA was conducting the operations of Operation 40, carrying out terrorist raids and preparing for the Bay of Pigs. The name, the secret code name for the operation, for the invasion of Cuba at the Bay of Pigs was Operation Zapata. It's just a coincidence that Bush's oil company operating in the CIA area has the same name as the code name for the invasion. Well, and on and on, piled high and deep. There, as you mentioned, there is an FBI memo that places George Bush in Dallas on the day of the assassination, making phone calls to the FBI, saying, you know, throwing red herrings to the FBI on the day of the assassination, a half an hour after the assassination. This FBI memo says that Bush is giving them this red herring. When questioned about that FBI memo, Bush says that, like Hunt, he doesn't remember what he was doing on the day of the assassination. Like Nixon, he doesn't remember what he was doing on the assassination. These guys were in it together, and they continue to work closely together up until the time that Nixon was impeached.
The whole story is so amazing. In fact, they renamed one of the ships that was going to supply the people of the Bay of Pigs, the Barbara. I wonder if that was for Barbara Bush.
Fletcher Prouty. Well, right, there's 2 hours in this video, it nails down, like I said, there's an enormous amount of evidence. Bush had a habit of naming things in his personal life naming things in his military career after things in his private life. His first plane was named the Barbara II. That plane was shot down. He named his next plane the Barbara III. And as Fletcher Prouty relates, Fletcher Prouty was the number two guy at the Pentagon for relations for communications and coordination between the Pentagon and the CIA. When the CIA needed military equipment, Fletcher Prouty was the guy who was in charge of supplying it, and he tells the story that the CIA ordered three ships for use at the Bay of Pigs. These three ships were, they were military, they were Navy, and if these guys invading the Bay of Pigs were supposed to be private citizens, well, they had to try to disguise the ships and make them appear to be civilian ships. And so they repainted them and they renamed them. And the names that they gave them, two of the names, one is the Houston, which is the location of Bush's onshore. Zapata onshore was located in Houston. And another of the ships was named the Barbara. One more set in a huge pile of evidence. Some of it very tiny and circumstantial, but all of it, right? I mean, no matter how fine the point is that you put on this, you find small, tiny details linking George Herbert Walker Bush to these misguided anti-Castro Cubans named by the Hoover memo as relating to the assassination of John Kennedy. And in the huge picture of him as CIA director, in the huge picture of what he did when he left Yale and became an oil man operating offshore. One of the things that I'm proud to say about this video is that it only uses stuff that the Bushes admit about themselves. It uses CIA memos, it uses Secret Service memos, it uses FBI memos. It, to the largest extent, uses stuff the facts of which are not in dispute.
Well, let's go ahead and get your telephone number out one more time.
It's 310-301-7712.
One more time.
310-301-7712. The web address is jfkii.com.
Okay, we'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this evening has been John Hankey. I hope you've enjoyed the program. We've covered several things. We've covered the strange death of Gary Webb, who shot himself twice in the back of the head to commit suicide. This is probably the first time in all history where a man has shot himself twice with twice in the back of the head to commit suicide. I would question the validity of that statement. Then, we've talked about the Kennedy assassination, and I've seen the video. That's the reason I'm having John on all of our programs. I think the video is well worthwhile. In fact, we might even carry the DVD here. But right now, if you want to get it, why don't you give John a call and get it from him? Certainly, it's an important thing that you have the information. You'll actually see the pictures, the Zapruder films, and there's no question at all, even though I think that probably they've doctored the film a great deal. You have to be pretty naive not to see the fact that the shot comes from the front. Furthermore, of course, I have a 4-tape set on the JFK assassination. That's the first one where we actually talked to the Dr. Crenshaw, who was there on the day that Kennedy came in, and the shot came from the front, not from the back. But Dr. Crenshaw was threatened and told never to reveal that. John, do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
Well, I wouldn't remind people that I have shown this video to many Bush supporters, and all of them have been completely overwhelmed by it. The evidence is all of it uncontested, right? It's all in the public domain. It's all government documents and things that no one argues about. I hope that it's a key tool in really helping to waken people up. Somebody mentioned to me that I should encourage people to get it and show it to their children and to their grandchildren, so that the coming generations are informed about this stuff. I don't think it necessarily makes an appropriate Christmas present, but I think it makes a really excellent New Year's present to help people develop the resolve to do what's going to be necessary to defend our freedoms, which are very, very much under attack at the moment.
And, of course, if they could get away with killing the President of the United States,
they can get away with anything.
They can get away with what happened on 9/11. In other words, if they would lie about that, they'd lie about 9/11. They would lie about why we went into Iraq. And, of course, if you're not going to stand up and take a stand now, if you're going to just say, well, gee, maybe if I'm quiet, maybe they'll leave me alone, you really don't understand what we're up against. We're up against, in my estimation, organized evil. I think that John Hankey is out there on the front lines doing a great job. I want to commend you for what you're doing, John, and ask my listeners to help you. And, of course, if you, any way you can do that, certainly the autopsy, and you need financial help, you let me know, and we'll certainly get you on the program again to talk about it, okay?
I really appreciate it.
God bless. Bye-bye.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and Kellen, I hope you enjoyed the program. We've got some fascinating material. In addition to what John has, we have 2 tape sets on the Kennedy assassination. The first one has an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald, an interview with Dr. Crenshaw, who was at the Parkland Hospital on the day that they brought the Kennedy, President Kennedy in, and John Connally in, and a couple of days later when they brought Lee Harvey Oswald in. He was a witness to history. He saw the wounds, and of course they weren't the wounds you and I were told about, but he was threatened at the time, and 20 years, some years later, when he actually wrote a book on the assassination and what he had seen, he was immediately attacked by the Journal of the American Medical Association, their journal, and he sued them. And they settled out of court. They gave him $225,000, saying, well, we know he was wrong. We know he lied, but we just wanted to pay him off because it was cheaper to pay him off than to take the case to court. And if you believe that, you probably believe, that Lee Harvey Oswald was the lone assassin. Anyway, of course, then we have a two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty in the JFK Assassination 4-tape set classic. Professor Prouty was immortalized in the film JFK as the colonel who went to Jim Garrison and said, "There was a conspiracy, I know, because I was the CIA, the Pentagon liaison to the CIA. I know there was a conspiracy behind what happened." So let me, of course, suggest that you get the four-tape set update, and that, of course, is my interview with Madeline Duncan Brown, and of course, the interview with Jim Fetzer, who's done a lot of good research on this. We have a great book called Regicide, written by Gregory Douglas, supposedly based upon the papers of the man in the CIA who planned the whole thing, a man named Mr. Crowley. And then, of course, Robert Crowley. And then it's a fascinating, fascinating book. That's Regicide, and then we carry the book, A Sniper Looks at Dealey Plaza, written by Craig Roberts, our good friend Craig Roberts. In fact, that book was so good that HarperCollins wouldn't publish it, but the publisher called Craig and said, "You've got to get this information out." And Craig says, "Well, if it's so great, why won't you actually publish it yourself?" And the man said, "I'd lose my job. Don't you know that they have CIA people here attached to every major publisher? I wouldn't be allowed to put that out, but you need to get that book published." And so it came out actually as two books, The Medusa File and A Sniper Looks at Dealey Plaza. We carry both of them. You need to get the information, ladies and gentlemen, and then you need to join us in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation under God can long endure. So our plea to you is become informed. If you'd like a free copy of our November newsletter, I think it's a very effective newsletter. It's an entirely different subject. It's on fluoride and how they're poisoning the minds of your children, dumbing them down, doing damage to their brains so they'll never be normal, and they know exactly what they're doing. They're poisoning certain parts of the brains of our little girls so that they'll have a premature menarche and become sexually active earlier. We are poisoning our children by decreasing their thyroid function because, of course, fluoride attacks the thyroid and decreases fertility rates, and that's one of the big reasons is, of course, to control the population and to dumb down the population. They know exactly what they're doing, and 67% of the water in the United States is fluoridated today. If you'd like a free copy of my November newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Specify the November newsletter, and then go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Pull down our other newsletters. Listen to our archive programs. Note that we carry the Big Berkey, the Berkey Light Unit. We carry the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum. We carry the Sanjian Radio. We carry the Miracle 2 soap products. All of these things help us do what we do across America. And then, of course, we ask you to tell others about our program. We ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for our leaders. We ask you to pray for revival. Remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Pray for Radio Liberty. Till tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.